This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, good morning. Hope you're well.
Boker Tov. I wanted to share with listeners an interesting announcement that was made earlier this month and which kind of was below the radar due to other global events and regional events which have obviously occupied the international press over that time. But this is an announcement that recognizes Israel's Negev Desert as an officially recognized international wine region. And this is a region that sits alongside the likes of Napa Valley in the USA and Champagne and Bordeaux in France and Chianti in Italy, and of course the Cape Winelands as an internationally recognized wine region. But you wouldn't necessarily immediately envisage the Negev sitting alongside those regions, because for listeners who haven't visited that area or don't know about it, it's essentially a desert. It is an arid desert that doesn't necessarily immediately bring wine growing to mind when you see the terrain that dominates the Negev. And nevertheless, the Israeli agricultural system has managed to create some very, very interesting and well-recognized wine growing farms and wineries in the Negev in order to be able to compete with the best of international wines around the world. And I think that this is a really great achievement and something which really goes very much against your inclination and your instinct. And I suppose that it brings David Ben-Gurion, Israel's first prime minister, to mind, who had this vision of making the desert bloom. And he had in his mind the idea of taking the Negev and really doing some great things with it, because the Negev is about 60% of Israel's land mass. Israel is a very small country. It doesn't have the luxury of being able to accommodate areas like the Negev, particularly when they take up 60% of the land mass, and being unproductive, being something which doesn't allow people to live or to work, or, you know, unproductive land in Israel, unfortunately, is not a luxury that we can afford due to the very small land area that we already have. And yet the Negev has really produced some fantastic results, not only agriculture, not only making the desert bloom agriculturally, but also in terms of scientific innovation, in terms of work and technology, in terms of other interesting things. So this is just something which came to my attention, and I thought that it was great to share it as a really nice piece of positive
Absolutely.
News coming out of Israel.
100%. Really fascinating. I certainly didn't know that. Let's talk about the fact that the IDF last night carried out an operation to assassinate the recently appointed head of Hamas military in Gaza. What more do we know at this stage?
Well, we understand that the attack that was carried out against Mohammed Odeh yesterday seems to have been successful in finding him and eliminating him. That's the message that has been officially announced by the IDF and the Israeli Security Agency, and also confirms some of the unofficial words that have come out from the Gazan side. There was some sort of a message that came out from Odeh's nephew, who said that his uncle had been eliminated. Now, Mohammed Odeh, we spoke about him, I think, last week, Howard, and I suggested that he might want to shower with a helmet on.
Yes.
And apparently he didn't, because he has
what
finally been
not
eliminated.
Yep.
Well, maybe it wasn't a strong enough helmet. That's true. But the reality is that when I say he's finally been eliminated, it's not the first time that he's been targeted. He has escaped elimination on a few other occasions when the Israeli security agencies mistakenly had him located a certain place, when it turns out that when they carried out the attack, he wasn't there at all. But even though, even if he was not the head of a Hamas military, which he was appointed to that position only about a week ago. And let's not also forget that he had previously turned down being appointed to this position. Maybe we can work out why now in with the benefit of hindsight. But he always was a targeted individual, even if he hadn't picked up that position last week, because of his role in Hamas intelligence, particularly pertaining to events of October the 7th. And he was very, very much involved in putting a lot of intelligence together, in directing attacks that took place on October the 7th. He's been a person who's been collecting up intelligence already for quite some time, even prior to October the 7th. So he was very much a sought-after individual. And when he finally rose to the position of the head of the Hamas military last week, I think it just added some impetus to try to get rid of him. It's the fourth Hamas military chief who's been eliminated over the course of the last 2.5 years or so, almost 3 years. Mohammed Sinwar, the brother of Yahya Sinwar, had that position. Mohammed Diouf had that position. And only 12 days ago, it was Izz al-Din al-Haddad who was eliminated from the position. So Odeh is now the fourth person to hold this position over the last 3 years to have been eliminated. And I'm guessing that it doesn't end there, because interestingly, when one has a look at the Hamas military council that existed on October the 7th, and when one has a look at where those individuals are now, there is only one person on that structure who is still surviving. And he's a person who's been considered to be not actively involved in what happened on October the 7th. And yet he is still surviving. All of the others who were part of the Hamas military council on October the 7th are no longer with us. And Odeh, of course, was one of those. So we don't have a lot of sympathy for Odeh. He really caused much death and destruction. And even though the laws of the jungle do apply, and you know, no love is lost in war, the impact, I think, will probably be felt in Hamas, that they are really losing the last link to what was the leadership back on October the 7th. And we hope that as part of that, it will weaken them and weaken their structure, even though, as things stand at the moment, they still seem to have quite a firm grip on events in Gaza.
Yeah, that certainly does seem that way. So Iran restored its internet after 88 days. Is it still restored? I can't figure what is actually happening there.
Well, I think that it would be safe to say that the official internet, which is somewhat under the control of the regime, showed signs of coming back to life yesterday. And the way that we know about this is not because of official announcements, but rather because of those technology buffs who are managing to track internet activity as it comes out of Iran. I think we should also recognize that there have been alternative ways of Iranians gaining access to the internet. So while they have been substantially cut off, and I wonder what listeners would think if they were cut off from the internet for 88 consecutive days. You can all think about that as you grab hold of your phones.
Exactly, in panic. Yeah.
I think that Elon Musk did provide some access to the internet via Starlink, so that people could gain sort of unofficial access in a roundabout way without having to go through the official channels to get to the internet. I don't think that the regime was able to cut that off entirely. So I think that there was some way of somehow getting access to the internet, albeit not very reliable and perhaps even not consistently available. But finally, yesterday, there were signs of the internet coming back to life. And rather than thinking about how it might impact on the everyday lives of individuals in Iran, because I'm sure that they finally would welcome the opportunity to get reconnected with that world out there, I'm just wondering what it says about the Iranian regime and what they are expecting over the coming days and weeks. I mean, they've clearly kept the internet disconnected for 88 days for good reason. They didn't want people to be able to go out and advertise numerous things, like, for example, where missiles might be falling, which was one of the things that some of the Gulf countries were also very, very stringent about policing, to make sure that we don't advertise too much information about the successes of the enemy in order to encourage them to replicate those successes and to recreate them, or to potentially correct failures and to become more accurate in the missiles that were fired. And I know, for example, that the United Arab Emirates was very, very strict about that. But I'm guessing that Iran policed this to some degree by cutting the internet off so people couldn't advertise where missiles were falling, what targets had been hit, in order to potentially encourage the enemy. Also, to send out information about how the regime is doing and how the regime is responding and how the regime is potentially policing individuals. Because one of the things that we understood when we heard that something like 40,000 people had been killed in the space of a week because of protests that arose in Iran, though those, I think, were very much driven by social media and by internet, and the regime clearly felt a sense of a threat that came from that avenue. And I think that they understood that if they cut the internet off, it effectively cuts off the communication links and therefore potentially strengthens themselves as a regime against those who might want to protest against them. So by restoring those links right now, I wonder whether the regime has not decided that this is the moment that they feel that they're strong enough to bear any threat that might come from the restored internet link, whether they think that the negotiations with the United States are ultimately going to succeed. They don't feel the threat of a further military attack. I sense that this is a real statement by the Iranian regime about what their expectations are going forward and how they think they are firmly back in control and don't feel the threat, not from the outside, and also, more importantly, perhaps not from the inside of Iran in terms of protesters against the regime. So it's going to be interesting to see how the coming days pan out, because we also feel very unsure and insecure about whether this is going to go towards an agreement or whether this might land up with another military attack. I have to say that there has been a certain element of security preparation in Israel, which makes me feel like there is an expectation that this could quite easily go to a further military operation rather than the fact that, you know, an agreement is a foregone conclusion. I sense that even at the official levels, things are very, very unsure at the moment as to which way this is going to go. But the Iranians seem to be making a statement by allowing their internet to be connected again.
Fascinating, really, really unbelievable. It's so difficult to read what is really happening there. And then finally, the shekel has hit a new record level against the US. So firstly, what gives rise to the strength of the shekel, and how problematic is it for Israel?
Well, the shekel yesterday reached an exchange rate against the US dollar of 2.84 shekels to $1. And that is just something that we could never have anticipated. And this comes in spite of the fact that the interest rate in Israel was cut quite sharply, and yet the shekel rose. Now, we're still trying to work out whether the rise of the value of the shekel against the dollar is because of the fact that the shekel is stronger or because the dollar is weaker, because, of course, both of those would impact on the exchange rate. And it's just interesting that yesterday the shekel closed at 2.86 shekels to the US dollar, which is a very, very low rate, or a very high rate, depending on how you look at it, particularly when taking into consideration the fact that Israel has been at war for the last 3 years, and one would imagine that that would have its own economic impact on the country. And as a result of that, the expectation is if the economy is somewhat weaker, then you would expect the currency to follow suit and to be weaker as well. And yet, that has really not been the case at all. And the impact of the shekel, on the one hand, has been positive in the sense that it's somehow moderated Israel's inflation, which has remained particularly low. But of course, the threat of such a strong shekel is the threat of exports, and the fact that Israel finds it more and more difficult to export, whether it be goods and services that are being sold to markets abroad, or whether it be tourism, with people coming to Israel and finding that the cost of visiting is so astronomical, because not only of the fact that the prices have risen, but also because the shekel is so strong, and when people are converting the cost of their holiday back to their own home currency, it becomes a very, very expensive holiday, even for people coming from Western Europe and from the United States, relative to the holidays that they might have elsewhere in the world. They find it extremely expensive to come to Israel, and some of that is being driven by the strength of the shekel. So on the one hand, we like, you know, economic strength, and we like to be able to advertise to the outside world that in spite of the war, we're doing really well, our economy is holding up, our shekel is so strong, all of the positive signs that get transmitted in spite of the war that we're having to endure. But on the other hand, there are obviously certain significant consequences of the strength of the shekel. And to be fair, I don't think that anybody has explained to me clearly enough why it is that the shekel is so strong. Makes we just all sense. Sit here quite astonished, ordering as much as we can from Amazon and from everywhere abroad, because all of a sudden it becomes such a cheap buy for us to buy things, you know, online from abroad. But we still don't necessarily understand exactly what has driven this situation. There is no doubt that the dollar is weakened, but when one looks at the shekel against a basket of international currencies, the shekel is objectively a lot stronger than it was 3 years ago. And that is just something that we can stand here and say, wow, this is shocking and surprising. Why is that? I don't think anybody really could explain.
Absolutely mind-blowing. It is about to go 8 o'clock. Anthony Reich, thank you as always for the Israel Report, and catch Anthony tomorrow morning at 7:45.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.